We are recording. Anything we say from now on can affect our future presidential careers.
No, it won't.
I mean, like if it's real bad.
No, it won't.
Well, like if it's real bad.
No.
Like if it's real bad.
No.
It's like we're in the Klingon Empire. Like the only thing that can get you out of an election right now is like showing mercy to the opponent. This guy fed a prisoner. Kick him off the ballot. 3, 2, 1.
Is there anyone on the air?
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
I am vote beyond recall.
I had a reason for inviting each guest. I wanted kind of a cross section.
And you call this a party?
Could be.
Now there's only two of us here tonight, and we're going to lock ourselves in my room.
Men drilling by night, underground meeting places, pagan rituals. Well, anything's possible.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Nighthawks Podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for all of you cool cats and kittens that like to stay up late having coffee and pie and talking about films, and a pair of people who like coffee and pie and discussing films are us. Who are you? Not you, the audience, but you sitting at the table with me.
I'm Matt. Who the heck are you?
I am Trevor, and I believe, yes, for this edition, we are co-hosts for the Nighthawks podcast. This is the first one in a while, Matt. Well, no, I take that back. I guess we had Man on Fire alone, just the two of us. But we've had a lot of guests on recently, and so I just wanted to take just right off the top of the show, right in between when we say we are the Nighthawks podcast and when we say a member of the Hello Sweetie podcast network, I want to just squeeze a little thank you in there for all of our guests that have been on since episode 100, including our star-studded panel in that episode, Terry Fleming's, Katie Mae Peters. Like, it's been a good run, and thanks to all those people for giving us a little of their time. Also, we are a proud member of the Hello Sweetie podcast network. You can also find us on Facebook, find us on Twitter, and at the podcast aggregate of your choice. I think that's everything.
It sounded like it was most of the things.
Tonight, we're going to be covering Arachnophobia. This is a film from 1990, the directorial debut of one Frank Marshall, the great Frank Marshall, the late Frank Marshall. Creepy, crawly jaws with eight legs. Matt, do you have a fear of spiders? How do you handle the creepy crawlies?
I have a healthy respect for spiders and their personal space, but I don't have a crippling fear of them, no.
Yeah, I think I'm in that space. Like, I don't want a spider on me, but like, if a daddy long legs creeps up my pant leg, I am happy to brush them away gently. That's fine. But the I'm gonna buy a tarantula and keep it as a pet crowd, yeah, that's not necessarily my thing. Although I don't certainly don't think less of anybody who does.
See, I'm actually I'm in the, I don't know if this is a controversial thought or not, but I'm in the camp where, like, basically, if they're big enough to shoot with a .22, I'm no longer afraid of them. I don't like the little infiltrators. Like, I don't like anything that fits in my shoe.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about this, but the star of our film this evening is Jeff Daniels. And very famously being interviewed for the movie, said that, you know, I don't have...
So do you have a problem with spiders? I mean, I have no problem with little daddy long legs, little, you know, guys like this, you know. But when you got things like this, you know, like this, I think anybody in his right mind would have a problem with
that. This is a spider that is a foot across. Like, it makes sense to be just a little uneasy about it. But before we dig into the movie, number one, we're not going to have a spoiler warning on this. This is a 30-year-old film now. It's a gem. It's a classic. No spoiler curtain for this one. We will be discussing the film in toto. So buyer be warned there. But before we dig in, Matt, what have you been watching?
What have I been watching lately? I just got done with recently watched We Summon Darkness, which is a cute little cute little period 80s rock, has a trio of lady rockers and a trio of boy rockers, and then they are touring behind a band together, and there is also a mysterious killer picking off fans of the band and sacrificing them sort of ritualistically. And it's sort of a has a little bit of a whodunit twist as to who they know that is the killer. It has Alexandria Daddario and Johnny Knoxville in it, and they're everybody's pretty on. It was a hoot.
So wait, I thought We Summon Darkness, I thought that was the show about the woman who is sight impaired who solves mysteries with
I was going to say that next. That's called In the Dark.
Oh, okay. So We Summon Darkness is the band. In the Dark is the otherly sighted acerbic.
Okay. Yeah. And if you've never watched In the Dark, the setup is that we have a young woman who is blind. She is mugged, and her mugging is thwarted by a neighborhood ruffian, and she bonds with the ruffian, and then one day he disappears. And so she just sort of goes about blithely investigating his disappearance, and he is a low-level drug dealer, and she gets involved with the criminal underworld, and she's basically almost like a lady version of a Billy Bob Thornton character. Like she's
sold.
Pretty. She's got a little mouth on her.
Ew, get off!
Maybe Murphy can be the face of this company.
Oh, that's a great idea.
She doesn't do anything except eat candy bars and take naps.
I think blacking out would be a little easier when you're blind.
You're not really blind, right?
She is.
Why don't you look blind?
Same reason you probably don't look stupid.
I didn't know your dog was in here.
You're like a stalker.
How does it feel to not care about anyone but yourself?
Go.
She's in the middle of a crisis.
Does it look like I have my life together? So watch it!
I wish I didn't like sex so much.
I think I know what you do.
Oh, yeah?
It's like the only time that you don't have to feel blind.
Guess who?
Feel your eyes burning a hole in my ass.
I haven't been able to take my mind off you.
Porn has made all dudes a little kinky.
Sweetheart?
One sec.
Oh, I don't like our cancer, and I wanted to surprise you.
It's nice to see you again, Murphy.
This is a glass table, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on to me.
Tyson? Where are you, dude?
We'll run up the stairs.
God.
Somebody help!
They didn't find a body, not even a drop of blood. Your friend is wasted.
Something happening to Tyson is the worst thing that could ever happen to her.
You're really that close?
A 15-year-old kid saved her life.
I know you're just trying to be nice, but you're basically telling me you're gonna wait and see what happens.
Something happened to him. Where do I find Darnell?
No one believes me.
Because you're a drunk mess.
We have no idea what life must be like for you.
You guys know I'd be a mess even if I could see perfectly.
You can't solve a murder case.
Because I'm blind?
You cannot even remember to plug in your cell phone.
I just wish someone saw what I couldn't.
Oh my God, this stupid dog.
He's gonna help me. Get up!
Why are people getting up? Where are we going?
It's also very heartwarming. They successfully pull off the heart of gold maneuver. Uh-huh. There is a soft nougat center under all the acerbicness.
So that's In the Dark. You talked about We Summon Darkness. Now, I'm not going to get too into this because I am actually watching this for Screener Squad over at oneofus.net. But I have been watching I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which is the Michelle McNamara. I don't know. We talked about this a little bit in the last episode, but it's part biography. It's biography through her investigation into the Golden State Killer, also known as the original Night Stalker and a couple of others, like fairly prolific serial killer rapist. East Area Rapist was another one of his names. It's dark, it's sad, it's gut-wrenching, but it's also fascinating. However, I do have to confess, just by way of a note on titles, I am getting all of these shows screwed up in my head to an absurd degree between In the Dark, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, What We Do in the Shadows, We Summon Darkness. Like, this is getting a little
Well, then you also have Into the Dark is Hulu's House Horror label.
That's yeah.
It's Hulu's little anthology they're doing. So
a lot of darkness.
And then there is also just Dark, which is an excellent kind of Norwegian
right
magical realism thing. Is it Norwegian or German or something?
European, I think, is safe.
You know, the European films.
So yeah, it is kind of a dark time. We are still in the midst of the coronavirus caused COVID-19 global pandemic of 2020. We're also facing down some fairly monumental shifts in social culture and society. And we're also looking to perhaps overthrow the government in a couple of months from the comfort of our fire station schools, and hopefully via mail would be an option. So yeah, it is kind of a weird time. So I don't necessarily blame everything for being labeled as dark. And I'm sure several of these have been in production since long before what we're going through right now. It's a fun little naming coincidence.
Oh, I did. Speaking of, actually, can I go back and do one more?
Yeah, go ahead. I've got one more too. Let's do it.
I just watched something called Host.
Tell me about Host, because the Fantastic Fest fiends are on about Host. I have heard about Host, but I know nothing about Host. Now, this is not the Host. This is not the Bong Joon-ho film.
Which is also good.
Very good.
No, this is a slightly different creature. It is one of the first together. There's another one, actually, that I watched at the drive-thru here, because I got the shakes and had to go to a movie. There's another one called Followed that was kind of similar. But this is, it's very short. It might be 60 minutes exactly, or even a little short of the feature mark. But it is all shot on Zoom.
Really?
So it is about a bunch of paranormal investigators that can't do their investigation due to quarantine, so they have a seance on Zoom.
Have you ever done anything like this before?
I've never done this over Zoom. Obviously, we're not physically together, but there's no reason why Spirit can't communicate over the internet.
Nothing's gonna happen.
Visualize us sitting in a circle. Spirit, we invite you to use us to pass on any communication. Is there anyone there? Please come forth.
What was that? Amy, was that you?
I heard it. I heard something.
I think there's something here.
Do you see that?
We've connected with something. We gotta keep going. We gotta talk to it.
This is not good. I told you not to disrespect the spirits. It could be something demonic.
Hey, this is all your fault! Not my fault! This is your fault!
And they find out this sort of, like, I don't know if the conceit is that because they're physically spread out, that they've drawn a giant summoning circle or what, but they accidentally kind of summon a large, you know, like a very powerful presence, and it does what it does. It's basically, it is kind of a Paranormal Activity style visual puzzle, watch the background kind of piece, because like you're sitting there and then, you know, like a dark shape crosses behind them. It is very lean and very brisk and gets down to business quick. And avoids a lot of the pratfalls of that subgenre where they're just like beating stuff to death, you know, which is something that personally drives me nuts. And it's missing some of the like the fun killers of found footage movies where like that obligatory scene where they like yell at the guy for having a camera. Some of that ear beating that that movie typically gives the audience is skipped here. It is pretty fun and pretty effective and just kind of a nice little making the best of a bad scene kind of thing. Followed is pretty similar. It is a nice little ghost hunting piece about a paranormal investigator's investigation, but it takes place entirely through his live chats and live streams. So it is the story of a paranormal investigation that goes all through that has an interface. Like it's like you're watching it on YouTube and watching him stream. And it's pretty effective, and it actually also avoids some of the genre problems by having like a beginning, middle, and end, and having like a reason for the things that are happening, and a reveal, like a good reveal and arc.
What's up, minions? Drop the mic here. Many people don't know this, but real-life serial killer.
In 1913, right here is the dumpster where David Olmos would dump his dismembered body.
Shut up, Michael!
I just had an incredible phone call. They just told me that if I can get 50,000 subscribers by the end of Halloween weekend...
Okay, what's the hitch?
Okay, it's in a hotel that the unenlightened claim is mildly haunted.
Now you know. Absolutely thrilled.
I got a couple of security cams here. Spy cam set up with a button.
We are now entering the first layer of Dante's Inferno.
From here on out, we're rolling 24/7.
What you bring into it, psychologically, it matters, so...
Guys?
Oi!
Guys?
Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore.
You guys know about the elevator ritual, right?
You enter the elevator on the first floor alone. You then go to the following floors in this precise order. You go to the fourth, second, sixth,
it's open,
and then fifth.
Oh, a satanic symbol!
What happens next?
Apparently you enter the other world.
Oh God, Michael, where are you now?
I'm heading towards the hotel basement.
I beg you, please, get out of there.
Who's there?
So those have both been kind of cool to watch, like just to see people work with what they're stuck with, you know. I don't know, what have you been watching?
You know, I dug into the Criterion Channel. I decided it was time. Start filling in some of the holes that I have left for myself. I mean, and obviously, as is evidenced by the last several episodes, we always seem to run into one that I haven't seen. So in an attempt to kind of plug some of those holes before I'm outed on the podcast, the one I checked out last week was Yojimbo from Akira Kurosawa. And I had never seen
this. The story of a man who meets a trucker. Get it? Because the man would be like, Yojimbo.
Oh, okay. I got it.
See what I did there?
Yojimbo. Yeah, okay. I'm with you. But I had never seen this before. It's a classic. It has been remade twice, once with permission, once without. And I think there are probably several other films that owe at least a tip of the hat to some of this DNA. But the two remakes were, of course, A Fistful of Dollars, Clint Eastwood, Sergio Leone. And then the other one was a Bruce Willis vehicle called Last Man Standing. Neither of those I have seen, so I was able to kind of walk into this blind for the most part. I was culturally aware of the story, but as far as any specifics, I was in the dark. But
we might have to do a rare double episode on the two of them.
Yeah, that would be a fun one. Because I tell you what, Matt, I am Mad Max Fury Road levels in love with Yojimbo.
Yojimbo is the one where he sits on the flagpole in the middle of town and laughs at them while they fight each other, right?
Yeah.
Make sure I've got my Kurosawas correctly correlated.
And it's led by... the reason that this came up is that Criterion Channel has both a Kurosawa collection and also a, in honor of the late Toshihiro Mifune's 100th birthday, they have a large collection of Toshihiro Mifune films. He's the lead actor in Yojimbo. He is the man with no name. And this was just fantastic. It was fun. It was funny. It was action-packed. It had a lot of great emotional beats. All of them were earned. This is a film from, I believe, the 60s. And it still 100% functions. No asterisks. Like, I loved this. So you're right. We may have to circle around and do a Man with No Name episode.
The quick plot synopsis there is that a lone gunman comes to a town contested by multiple, I guess in the Yojimbo version, you'd say a lone swordsman. He comes to town and multiple sort of, they're rival samurai, right? Or is one of them bandits or something?
It's two criminal enterprises in town, basically. And when it came time for an heir to take over the criminal enterprise, it was contested. And so there was this fissure. And it's a town that's very ingrained in gambling and crime. And I believe... They're the two rival businesses are a brewery and a textile mill, and it's the story of Yojimbo coming into town and playing both sides against the middle to try and clean this town up. It's really entertaining.
Yeah, they keep outbidding each other for his services, and he is incredibly mercurial and switches sides, and then it is, I think it's eventually revealed that he's there to, basically he just decides to hang them both.
Fan of comics or even just the movies they're based on.
Check out the Funny Books and Firewater podcast.
Each week, Brian,
Maya,
Todd, and Adam review a graphic novel
and discuss what drinking games should go along with it,
as well as recommend what adult beverages should be enjoyed.
New episode drops every Monday on iTunes, Google Play,
and Stitcher.
Funny Books and Firewater.
We're a drinking podcast with a comic book problem.
From Hollywood Pictures and Amblin Entertainment, when Dr. Ross Jennings and his family decide to move to the country...
Oh, Ross, smell that air.
They thought they'd found the perfect little town.
How are you finding life here?
But instead...
It's all rotten down there.
I'll call the exterminator.
They're getting more...
Would anybody object if I tore this floor
out? I would.
False alarm, then, lead on.
...than anyone's bargained for.
I think we got a big problem here.
Now, experts are moving in.
Rock and roll!
And neighbors are moving out.
There may be some spiders around here that are very dangerous.
This is way out of my league.
He believes he came across one of the offending spiders a couple hours
ago. Actually, it's probably still in a bottle on my shoe.
It's a roller coaster ride you'll never forget. Arachnophobia, the most fun you'll have being scared.
Hello?
So moving on to our feature presentation, we are talking about 1990's Arachnophobia. By way of synopsis, a sports photographer gets more than he bargained for while on assignment in the uncharted regions of the Venezuelan rainforest. He's teamed up with a group of scientists who are studying insect populations of an isolated sinkhole. The photographer is then killed by the bite of a giant, as yet undiscovered by man, spider. The young photographer's body is shipped back to his idyllic town of Canaima, California, and an unwitting stowaway is in the coffin with him. Yes, the killer South American spider is along for the ride. Meanwhile, a young general practitioner and his recently laid-off stockbroker wife are moving from the big city to a place in Canaima with their kids. Struggling with the move, Dr. Jennings, who, by the way, suffers from a crippling fear of spiders, finds himself as an outsider in a very inside town. This is a cautionary tale about contamination and invasive species as the killer spider breeds and broods a new generation of California killer arachnids who start killing people in the town. With the town casting blame on the outsider, the new doctor must get to the bottom of the mysterious deaths, save his family, and save his neighbors as his greatest fear starts skittering across the floor of the little town, and it is out for blood. We've got Jeff Daniels playing Dr. Ross with Julian Sands as the dashing entomologist Professor Atherton, and... You know what that sound means. It's all good, man. Yes, it's the all good man alarm, like the Frank Grillo alert system and the Nighthawk spoiler warning. The it's all good man alarm notifies our listeners to the presence of John Goodman in a movie. In this case, the good man known as Goodman stars as a one-man exterminator army fighting against all things creepy crawly, including the new California Venezuela super spider. The directorial debut of the late Frank Marshall, Arachnophobia, is part comedy, it is part horror, and it is the first film from Hollywood Pictures, which was a branch of Disney used to promote a more adult-oriented fare.
By which we mean like PG-13 and R, not, you know, Mickey Mouse hentai.
Right. So Matt, how did this leave you overall?
This was my nomination for a watch. I picked it because I was like thinking about like stuff that we had like good traction on, and I had not rewatched this since it was in theaters.
Oh, really? Okay.
And this is something that I saw when I was 11, and when I was 11, I thought it was just the bee's knees, you know.
Yeah, when I saw this when I was 11, this was a movie that had me and my friend. It was my friend comes over to spend the night. We rented a couple of films from the Smith's grocery store, and this is one of the ones that we were trusted to watch alone, because at the end of the day, it is still a pretty family-safe horror film, although there are some chills and spills in here that the younger kids may not appreciate, you know, viewer discretion advised. But this movie had us crawling up the walls. It had us squirming up in our seats. We were just... And it was super effective. It gave us the creepy crawlies as kids. And I remember being so taken with it that I read the junior novelization with 16 color photos from the film that I got at a Scholastic book fair.
Remember those? Those books are the reason Alan Dean Foster's kids went to college.
Yeah, the novelization in this case was written by a guy named Nicholas Edwards. I vividly remember reading it. And although I think I have seen it, Matt, more recently than you have, obviously, this was a first time watch in probably about at least 10 years. And I have to say, I am actually fairly surprised how well this stuck with me. Like, almost to the detriment of the movie that it wasn't as chilling and spilling as it could have been because I remembered so much of this movie. So I saw a lot of it coming on this watch. But yeah, this is another one I watched early. And in the watch, I think it's that fun adventure, Amblin, Robert Zemeckis, Frank Marshall, Steven Spielberg, Kathleen Kennedy stable of filmmakers. And it's just, it's hard to find a movie in that cluster from this time that's not good. I mean, at least at the end of the day, they're all entertaining.
It feels Chris Columbus-y, even though it's not.
Yeah, good call.
But yeah, this was a cut. This is the proverbial doctrine of, like, especially kind of 90s, 2000s, late 80s. This is what they call a four quadrant movie. A number, you know, like it hits all four. Because the big idea at the time was to kind of make fair that would get everybody to go to one. Something that when mom and dad sat down and flattened the newspaper out on their kitchen table, look it up, kids. they could pick one movie and not have to split the fam up into different theaters at the Megaplex. It has a little bit of a couple in their 30s, 40s moving to the country, a little bit of a monster scare, a little bit of a dashing adventure outside of the country a la Indiana Jones, a little bit of kids doing kid stuff. It's supposed to be a movie that everybody can plunk down and watch together, and it's just and it is in that lane of, like, the Home Alone and the what was the one where they Jingle All the Way, you know, that kind of thing. Like, some people say that was an overly safe time or whatever, but I mean, they worked, as Mel Brooks is known to say, the picture made money. This one was kind of funny because they called this a thrillomedy.
Yeah.
Which is awful and did not catch on.
I'm so glad that didn't catch on.
But this is the first thing I watched that was not like a Plan 9 from Outer Space accidental camp. This is the first horror comedy on purpose that I remember watching. Where it also, like, it isn't the kind of horror comedy like Freddy breaking the fourth wall and being like,
nice hearing from you, Carlos.
It's not that kind of wisecracking comedy, but it's more of like a family. There's some unevenness to this, and some of it works, but some of it's a little bit, you know, one moment a guy will, like, die of a spider bite and they will show his desiccated body. A few minutes later, you have, like, John Goodman being like a wacky, he almost, his manner in this really reminds me of, like, Bob and Doug McKenzie. Like, he's like, yeah, you know, or Eric Cartman, when Eric Cartman is pretending to be an adult. Yeah, you're looking for your basic egg sack here. Gonna be round, pulsating, you know, basic egg sack.
You got bad wood. Take out bad wood.
Yeah,
good wood.
He's kind of just laconic, and he has his own theme music, and it lets you know that a funny part is there. But then some of the spider sequences in this are really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So the device here is that these are colonial spiders. They have a king and a queen, like a wasp nest, and then there are many sterile drones. And what they did is they used Goliath tarantulas for the royalty and then a regular huntsman spider for the juveniles / drones.
Well, they weren't huntsman spider. They actually auditioned spiders and ran them through, like, kind of a spider Olympics.
Yeah.
They were New Zealand Avondale spiders. They're big. You can see them on camera. They look menacing, but they are virtually harmless to humans. And the other thing is they get along together. They're a social spider. And so typically you put two spiders in a confined space with each other. One of them's going to get pissed off at the other end. Somebody's going to get et. And so they had to find a very socialized spider that wasn't going to do a lot of internecine fighting, isn't the right word, but that aren't going to fight among themselves and that are also safe to be around. And they also, I guess, they were well-behaved spiders because if you were to place a cup or something over them, they would just basically curl up and wait. And so it was just very ideal spider actor.
This was during a kind of, it would have been very un-PC of them to just gush a bunch of spiders for this movie.
Right.
So they even, like, when someone steps on one, they're in a thick-soled shoe that has a spider hole in the foot.
Uh-huh.
I can't say that no spiders were possibly harmed in this, but they even went out of their way not to kill spiders while making it.
Some of the old featurettes that they used to show, like on syndicated television and especially like on the Disney Channel to promote new movies or new attractions at the Disney parks or whatever, they had these little featurettes that they would do that were about a half hour, and they'd use them as filler content, but they're also ostensibly used to promote the film. And it was a major talking point in some of those featurettes. Now, how truthful they were, I don't know. But the stories from the set and the stories in this featurette are all, no, they took excellent care. They took arguably better care of the spiders than they did the actors. Especially, it sounds like that Venezuela shoot was particularly arduous. And I can't believe that they filmed on location in Venezuela. That seems really unnecessary for the amount it's in the movie.
Yeah, they did it like the first 20 minutes of this happens in Venezuela when they're recovering the spider, right? It was shot in a wildlife preserve, like a national park in Venezuela, that really had no modern facilities. So they were actually like tent camping for part of the shoot, and they had to fly in. There's these things called tepuis that are kind of like thin mesas. Then tepuis alternate with cenotes, like sinkholes. So it's this very unique terrain, and truth and fiction that they do preserve a lot of biology, and they are one of those places like the Galapagos that researchers like to go. But I don't know why they could have shot it in Mexico or Seattle or, you know, the Pacific Northwest or, and apparently they just got themselves in a little deep. The location shoot was pretty rough. And then there's also like the climactic scene in here happens in their unfinished basement that they're turning into a wine cellar. If you think about a wine rack, it's pretty good spider habitat and has lots of little nooks and crannies. There's a scene where Jeff Daniels is like trapped under some debris and he's throwing things at the spiders. The comedy aspect is that it's his very expensive wine. And so he's like, every time he picks up a bottle, he's like, not the Chateau Lafite, you know?
I believe it is a Chateau Margaux, however. And I only know that because I have read exactly one book on wine. And so ask me no follow-up questions.
Well, like when I was watching that, I was like, when you look at like, and they have spider point of view shots that had to take like at the time this was shot.
Oh, God.
Had to take some pretty sophisticated dolly track and stuff. And so that basement kind of climactic duel between him and the king spider.
Uh-huh.
Who they call him the general in the script.
And he was on set nicknamed Big Bob, named after Robert Zemeckis.
He was a Goliath tarantula with a prosthetic abdomen. And it's kind of like one of those things where like the, you know, Jaws was bad for the reputation of sharks. Because Goliath tarantulas are actually, they're kind of just sort of dumping along. They're not, unless one gets your finger or something, they aren't really oriented to really bite a person. I would rather live in an ecosystem with Goliath tarantulas abound than like those awful Australian necrotizing bite spiders, you know, that look more like a regular spider. And that's actually, that's kind of my comment on the horror aspect of this movie. The big fight at the end with the general gets kind of slapsticky. The intermediary kills with the little spiders infiltrating the townspeople's homes, they make you want to shake your shoes out.
Those were terrifying, and those probably still are the best horror beats in this movie, you know, 30 years later.
Why don't we just take the dead spider and get out of here? Oh, no, Ross, you don't get off that easy. Dead spiders already desiccated. Wouldn't be any use to
us. You mean macerated?
No, I mean desiccated. Dried up, drained of all its blood.
Right. Macerated is the
chewing that they do.
Chewing, right.
They're like little vampires.
This trip to Atherton to find the spider species, where'd you go?
South America. Venezuela, why?
Is that one of them?
Ross, you're gonna have to take a step towards it.
Chris, I'm scared to death.
Yeah, we all are. But our brains secrete a neurotransmitter and enables us to deal with them. Come on.
I don't think I have that particular neurotransmitter.
Yes, you do.
And also when the big flush of spiders happens and they really infiltrate, they really infiltrate their house in like a carpet. They're coming out 40 or 50 deep, coming out of the plumbing, coming out of the walls. You're just like, that's a lot of spiders.
Yeah.
You know?
So worth mentioning, Big Bob was not exclusively a Goliath tarantula with some fancy appliances. They also used an animatronic spider, which will come as no surprise to anybody. However, that is worth noting because the Big Bob animatronic is an early, if not the first, film credit for special effects technician and Mythbuster Jamie Heineman, the progenitor of one of the finest mustaches on the Discovery Channel. He was instrumental in creating Big Bob.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, anybody that's seen that shop knows that there's a spider drawer somewhere there. There's an everything drawer somewhere in there.
Frank Marshall has gone on record with this movie as saying the tone that he wanted to invoke was something like riding a roller coaster where you're terrified but you're laughing at the same time. And that's where that weird portmanteau of thrillomedy came from that I am so glad just never caught on. And he cited specifically his influences on this movie were The Birds and Jaws, which of course was Steven Spielberg's huge breakout blockbuster film, and Spielberg is a producer on this. Overall, Matt, do you think it works? Was it effective enough?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't displeased with the movie or anything. It didn't scare adult Matt as much as it did 11 Matt, but okay. One would hope, you know.
I do want to talk a little bit about the cast and crew here. I think part of what makes this movie such a fun watch is the cast. Everybody here is doing a good job. All of the extras for the bucolic town are all charming and wonderful and funny. We have Jeff Daniels as Dr. Jennings. You'll know him from things like The Newsroom, Dumb and Dumber, Looper, Good Night, Good Luck, and the television series, I believe on Netflix, Godless, which I bring up because Godless also features Nighthawk's favorite and Justified alumni, Justin Welborn. So be sure to check that out. And I actually really liked the doctor's wife in this, Molly, played by Harley Jane Kozak, who has a pretty storied television career. But this is my question for you, Matt. This movie also stars Julian Sands as Dr. James McHandsome Atherton. Now, you'll remember Julian Sands from Warlock, A Room with a View, and Naked Lunch, but when I was a kid, I was fully convinced in the first 20 minutes of this movie, the story would be about Dr. Atherton and the photographer.
Yeah, the trailer kind of gives that impression that this is going to almost be like an Indiana Jones piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is definitely not actually delivered. It is one of the first kind of instances I remember of the Game of Thrones apparent main character dies first device.
Mm.
And it is noteworthy for that.
Well, and it's funny because I watched some of those featurettes that are available on YouTube with like somebody recorded them off of broadcast TV and they have horrible tracking lines and everything. The main featurette, the big behind-the-scenes sneak peek at Arachnophobia, was hosted by Mark Taylor, who plays Jerry Manley, the photographer, in the movie. And it's like he is the host of this half hour long segment introducing you to arachnophobia. Folks, this guy's in the movie for 10 minutes. And then there's this shift where we go from the very handsome and dashing Julian Sands to Jeff Daniels, who, you know, at the time, he was a young man. He was a good-looking guy. And his sidekicks, the exterminator and a grad student, you know? That always just weirded me out. It also weirded me out that John Goodman was not John Candy. This was my first exposure to John Goodman as a kid, I think. And I just assumed that every large actor in Hollywood was John Candy. And that is not the case. John Goodman is also a large actor in Hollywood.
He's large and big.
Yeah. Eagle-eyed viewers will also recognize Kathy Kinney in a very small but memorable role in this. She is the...
I had wondered if that was her, actually. Yeah. I forgot to check the credits.
Yeah, she is the wife of the town coroner, and most of you will probably remember her from the Drew Carey Show, where she played Mimi.
Sadly, R.I.P. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of R.I.P., Frank Marshall, worth mentioning, not actually that prolific of a director. He has some memorable credits. He directed Alive, about the Brazilian football team that got stuck in the Andes. And Congo, which was an early large-budget turn for one Bruce Campbell. Really, Frank Marshall's claim to fame is that he was a prolific producer. The guy has like 135 producer credits. Even though he has been gone from us, the guy still has stuff in production. And just to pick a few at random, we've got Raiders of the Lost Ark. We've got The Warriors. We've got Gremlins. We've got Goonies. We've got Back to the Future. We've got the Scorsese remake of Cape Fear. We've got the Spielberg firefighting ghost story Always, starring all good man John Goodman. Just a prolific producer. And then you team him up as a director with Kathleen Kennedy and Steven Spielberg producing for him. Like, you know, this is going to be a high production value film, if nothing else.
Yeah, and there is also, like, it's this sort of constellation of common collaborators that we see in a lot of the Cameron films.
Zemeckis films. Yeah.
It's a known good product, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We sit down, we know these guys are going to deliver at least watchability.
And I guess it was Frank Marshall's decision to kind of camp it up. Well, not camp it up is not the right word, but to inject a little comedy in here. An early interview with Jeff Daniels when he was cast says, the script's not very good. It's pretty formulaic. We're hoping to punch it up a little bit. So that was interesting that it even Jeff Daniels was kind of like, I don't know about this script. Maybe we can make it funny. It's a fun little tight adventure, thrilling comedy that if you haven't seen it before, I think it will probably give you the creepy crawlies. You'll feel that little tingle on your leg hair or maybe a little brush on the back of your neck. I hope you're not listening to this while you're driving because that could get dangerous. But I really enjoyed this one. And I can't remember if we said this on tape or not, so I'm going to say it now. But I was really surprised how much of this movie I remembered.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Everything is iconic. Everything is memorable. This movie just, it hits, it sticks, and it hangs with you. Not unlike a spider hanging from a little butt web.
Is that the technical term?
Yes, I think so.
From entomology?
I think they're technically all butt webs.
It's called the thorax. No, it's actually called the abdomen.
I will say, interesting bit of trivia though, Matt. Canaima, California does not exist. They were shooting in Cambria, California. However, Canaima was the actual area in Venezuela where they were location filming. So a weird kind of cyclical reference there.
One assumes a deliberate one, right?
Yeah.
Like a little homage for the locals.
A nod. So Matt, I'm gonna touch you on the, I did not actually put this formally in the rundown, but it's 30 years later. Should this be remade?
I mean, we've always got room for a giant spider in the third act, right?
So apparently as January 2019, James Wan announced that he was developing a remake with Amblin Entertainment, I think, or Disney or somebody. However, I have not been able to find any information on it otherwise, so I don't know that that ever came to fruition. But honestly, I'm watching this and there's not like, it's not like you're watching a film and you see a bunch of 90s cars and say, oh, this is really dated. This movie, I think, would work fine if you were just to pop it in the DVD player and tell people it was made last year. Like, I think it would function. There's not even an over-reliance. Like, there's, cell phones would not have gotten them out of this. It still works, you know? So as much as I think it could be remade, I'm not sure why you would want it to.
Yeah, there's a bit of a, I guess there is a bit of a lack of, like, information technology in it. Like, they don't just Google the spider. They actually have to call the expert immediately.
Right.
But, yeah, there's nothing in here. Even some of the aspects of, like, people having cell phones, you could just, like, up the stakes of the quarantine, you know, because at one point they tell you with quarantining the town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it could definitely continue to, like for sure. You could definitely still make a Plague of Spiders movie.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we're probably about due. I do have to say, though, it's very brave of them. It seems like every time the spider is a creature in a film, it is a spider of, like, car-squashing size. It's tarantula, it's eight-legged freaks, it's, you know... There are very few spiders, as villains in movies.
It's a Seuss, it's a spider of unusual size.
Well, Matt, what do you have any if-then recommendations off the top of your head?
Oh, gosh. What is the one from the, like, 80s? The Kingdom of the Spiders? There's a very similar straight, but played straight for horror movie. I think they did a Mystery Science Theater on.
There was a Kingdom of the Spiders in the 70s, in 77, with Shatner.
Oh, no. I'd remember Shatner. There is actually one that, two that I actually mentioned, a funny childhood story. I saw this movie on a trip to California to stay with my dad and stepmother. And California obviously is, like, I am from a place that is almost high desert tundra. One thing I will grudgingly admit about Wyoming is it doesn't have roaches. It doesn't have huntsman spiders. The idea of, like, every once in a while someone will have, like, a black widow in the cellar, or, like, there's little garden spiders in your yard, but the winter kills them. It was funny because I was in a buggier than usual environment. And for some reason, I think I didn't want to go to a baby cartoon and they wouldn't let me pick anything R, and so for some reason we ended up at Arachnophobia. It was also kind of funny because that summer I had some latchkey time in the middle of the morning sometimes, and I watched a lot of horror movies on USA, and they were running a summer of creature movies. They actually aired two of my if-thens. These are more horror, but they are old enough that you could probably laugh them off. But I recommend The Nest, which is about killer roaches.
Ew.
And Slug, which is about raccoons. No, it's about slugs. Both of them have some real gross out practical effects in them, and at one point a man roach. They're just fun gross out movies of my childhood. I don't know what I would recommend. Like, is there a spider specific recommend that I would have? I don't know. Most spider movies are giant spider movies.
So I think I'm going to recommend The Tingler, the William Castle directed, Vincent Price starring kind of camp classic from the late 50s. You will remember this. There is a John Goodman connection. William Castle was loosely fictionalized and lampooned in the film Matinee. But this is the movie, The Tingler is the movie, where William Castle had theater owners install buzzers in some of the seats. And so there is a key time when the screen goes dark in the film, and Vincent Price shouts, oh my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, please do not panic, but scream. Scream for your lives. The Tingler is loose in this theater, and if you don't scream, it may kill you. Scream. Scream. Keep screaming. Scream for your lives. It's here. It's over here.
Help. Help. Look out, it's under the seat!
Ladies and gentlemen,
look out, it's under the seat!
The Tingler has been paralyzed by your screaming. There is no more danger. We will now resume the showing of the movie.
And then, of course, you know, five or six people got their bottoms buzzed with this gimmick, get a reaction out of the audience. Fun little history there, but the Tingler is basically kind of a earwig-looking centipede, kind of just long, big bug creature, and I think fits nicely in here as just a piece of historical context. Otherwise, I'm just going to look off Frank Marshall's paper here, folks. I'm sorry for being lazy, but number one, Frank Marshall was the producer on Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which you will remember has a lot of squirmy, gross-out parts, including a scene involving a hell of a lot of bugs. So I would recommend that the second entry in the Indiana Jones series. I'm also going to recommend Jaws. Not that I necessarily have to. Honestly, this movie reminded me more of Jaws than it did of really anything else. And I'm going to, instead of just throwing out there the obvious pick of Jaws, why don't you go back and listen to episode 2 of the Nighthawks podcast, just to see how far we've come, where we talk about Jaws, we talk about a couple of other films that we feel were inspired by Jaws. Which, I don't know, Matt, would you consider this a Jaws clone? Is this a shark movie?
Not really, I don't think, because like Jaws runs off making something ordinary sinister, and the gimmick here is a abnormal phobia is justified. I actually had in my head, I guess, I had Kingdom of the Spiders, which is where many small spiders take over a town, which has been Riff Track confused with a giant spider invasion, which has been an MST3K.
Okay.
I'm glad I ran into that because a certain person whose name starts with E can stop yelling at the computer now.
My last if-then recommendation is The Birds. Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. Something mundane goes crazy and tries to kill a bunch of people. It's creepy.
How do you do? My name is Alfred Hitchcock, and I would like to tell you about my forthcoming lecture. It is about the birds and their age-long relationship with man. It will be seen in theaters like this across the country. In my lecture, I hope to make you all aware of our good friends, the birds. Theirs is a noble history, and through it all, man has played a conspicuous part. Surely the birds appreciate all we've done for them. Beautiful cage, fresh water, nor the birds to bother you. None of that blinding sunlight. Oh! Now, why would he do that? Most peculiar. What on earth?
I will say that The Birds kind of has evolved into a homework watch. If you are not on board, the special effects may not thrill you that much. But if you actually know the stories behind a lot of the effects and the way they did things.
This was a whole lane in like the late 70s. So like there was Food of the Gods, where we had different giant animals and a giant baby.
Oh my God, you're right.
Which was, I think, was it a Jules Verne story that they made into a movie?
But
it was
Wells, about a, I believe.
H.G. Wells, yeah. It was about a magic food source they found welling out of the ground, a la manna from heaven, that made things thrive unusually. Night of the Lepus.
I love Night of the Lepus.
Which is about giant attack rabbits. Giant, semi-carnivorous jackrabbits. That's true. That's what it's about.
Kingdom of the Spiders may have featured William Shatner. Night of the Lepus features one DeForest Kelly.
There's Ticks with Clint Howard, which is actually pretty effective. Piranha. Piranha is a franchise that continued into the modern era with Piranha 3D.
And 3 triple D. Double D?
I don't know quite.
There was one with the boob joke in it. Grizzly is a one.
An actual good one that is kind of a good, would make a good pairing with this. Eight-Legged Freaks. It is tongue-in-cheek enough and self-aware enough to kind of save it from some of its like effects problems. But it is a very knowing nod to like 50s giant animal movies. I believe it's David Arquette is the goofy protagonist. But it literally starts like a Far Side cartoon. It starts with a truck full of Acme Spider Company, and they're driving and they pass a sign that says toxic waste dump. It's just like the old Far Side, you know, trouble brewing.
Day of the Animals, that was another one. I'd throw in an honorable mention for Roar, even though the conceit of Roar is not that the people are being maliciously menaced by the animals and that's more... Roar isn't a movie, it's a sideshow attraction, but I think it would probably fit well here.
There's the recent Itsy Bitsy. It's hard to discuss without some spoilers.
I was a fan of the original, I was a fan of the sequel, and I am a fan of the remake, Willard, the Willard franchise about killer rats.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I enjoyed those.
If we're just going to keep playing Six Degrees, that takes my mind to Graveyard Shift, the Stephen King adaption.
Yeah.
Which is sort of creepy, but does not do the short story very good justice.
No. Did you ever see Razorback from Australia? It was an exploitation movie about the giant killer Razorback.
That's an older movie, isn't it?
Yeah, 1984, I think.
I have not seen that. Have you seen Boar?
No, but I want to.
Which is a recent Drafthouse movie that's very along those lines.
And then there was another one out of Korea that I think was called Chaw.
Oh, and if you really just want to freak out, watch the Morgan Spurlock documentary Rats.
Or the available on Drafthouse's VOD service. They also have the documentary Bugs, which is about trying to raise awareness for bugs as a food source.
Yeah, I don't know. They're gonna have to be heavily deep fried.
any final thoughts before we see these fine people off?
If you watch this, like, make sure like you've cleaned up your floor. I wear glasses, and there's like a bolt in my shower that I try to kill about six times a week. I don't know about you guys, but.
Yeah, and I think we're going to close out. So we're going to finish our coffee, curds and whey, and take it easy, folks, because it's almost morning.
Why is it that every time we sit down to deliberately do an easy light hour-long episode, when we have an easy light hour-long record, I get like Stockholm Syndrome at the end? I'm like, well, are we really done? We didn't talk about it for 6 hours.
Meanwhile, a young general practitioner and his recently laid stockbroker... Oh, that's a typo.
What?
I his recently laid wife, which does happen in the movie.
Yeah.